You know, my sugar got a little low. I had to, you know, bring her back up real quick.
Not my sugar got a little low. I think that's what a perfect way to start bringing you into week two of the Maximum Fun Drive. Is that a Twix? Is that a twin side-by-side situation? Yes. 2 weeks of the Maximum Fun Drive is here, and we're on our second week, and we're really excited to be bringing you all of this really fantastic stuff around the network. It's the best time of the year to support the show on account of all the extra goodies you get by doing it during the drive. So to everyone who stepped up already, thank you. We love you. We appreciate you, and we couldn't make this show without you.
And to all the rest of Jews who ain't done it yet, okay, we're happy to remind you, you can go to MaximumFun.org/join, okay? That way you can go ahead and, you know, give a little couple dollars, you know, a month, you know, help us out, you know, help the people be for the people, as they say. I'll say it one more time, MaximumFun.org/join. We'll get into some more details later on in the show, and we'll remind you again, but go ahead and do it right now if you want to. Let's start the show.
Hit the music! Welcome to Fans High, the podcast for all those complex and complicated conversations about the gray areas in our lives. I am the host with the most because my co-host couldn't do much, Jared Hill.
Wow! Wow! This disrespect. I am journalist, editor, and authoress times two, Travell Anderson. Coming up on the show today, we are going to talk about, you know, these Black Lives Matter stories you've seen in the headlines about the celebrity activists and whatnot. We're going to get all up into it. But first,
it is time for us to get into a bit of conversation about the biggest story of the week. This week, we celebrated one of the most important things happening anywhere in the world. It's called the Costume Institute Gala. It's better known as the Met Gala, and the annual museum fundraiser brings out all the stars to one of the year's biggest red carpets. There's literally no story on earth more important than whether or not this year's cast of celebs was on theme or not. For those of you that listen to the old podcast I used to host, I think there's probably two of you. Back to reality, we used to do this segment on the show every year where we'd cover the Met Ball and who is the biggest fan of the Met Ball. Well, she's gotten too big for that show now, but luckily I have a bigger show to bring her to. she has graciously offered to join us, and it's particularly appropriate as this year's exhibit at the Met Ball is curated by filmmakers, so it's appropriate to have a prolific filmmaker joining us this week. NAACP Image Award nominated director, fashion goddess, and member of the Fans High fam, Tiffany Johnson. Welcome to Fans High.
I'm going to punch you in the face when I see you. Hello. Thank you for having me.
Welcome.
Yeah, I miss those Back to Reality days when I used to come on and act as though I was a fashion correspondent and do that.
We were in a dungeon of a studio, like in a storage unit with no ventilation. It was a shit show, quite literally, but also very fun.
Yeah, it was. Hello.
Tiffany is kind of like my little sister and bestie and all of the things. So I'm just excited for you to be here because I know you listen to the show but have never been on the show. So first things first, talk to us about why you love the Met Gala. Like, what is it about that carpet and that fashion that just always captivates your attention?
Yeah, I can't remember when I first became aware of it. But as soon as I was aware of it, it became just like my Super Bowl. It was like my Super Bowl Sunday. It's the biggest celebration of fashion. And I love fashion. And I love the idea of just getting dressed up and like expressing yourself. So it's become a red carpet that I always look forward to and can't wait to see how people interpret the theme or if they even try to interpret the theme or what the theme is and all that stuff. So I don't know, just, it's like, it's a big fashion Super Bowl. And I just get really excited and inspired and to see, you know, how people show up.
Are you one of the people who's like, you need to be on theme? Like, don't come if you're not going to be on theme? Or are you like, you're interested in seeing how people, you know, just show up in general?
I would say it's 50-50. When the theme makes sense, I like to see how people interpret it. As of late, it seems like the themes are a little confusing or whatnot. So at the end of the day, I just want to see people show up and show out. I get really annoyed if I feel like it's a look that you could do on any other day of the week or any other red carpet. So that's where I tend to get a little bit like, come on now. But other than that, I'm just excited to see how people just express themselves, to be honest, and really be creative. Like, go big. This has been like one night where all the rules are kind of out the window, except for being plain and boring. And just, yeah, go big. Like, you know, I love that.
So talk to me about the theme this year and what it meant to you. The theme was the Gilded Age. What does that even mean? How do you interpret that? Because I know that the theme is a big thing.
Yeah, well, the exhibit this year is actually called It's in America, an Anthology of Fashion. And it's like part two of the exhibit they had last year, which was In America, a Lexicon of Fashion, I think. But the theme or sort of dress code was Gilded Glamour. And I think it was like, for some folks, you know, what does that mean? Like, what does that really look like? And especially for, you know, African Americans, people of color, it's like how do we translate ourselves into that time? But for me, it was more or less just to see how people kind of take sort of what American fashion is and the evolution of that, and kind of just you know, just personalize it. I like when people take the themes and they really try to incorporate sort of a personal touch for themselves in it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think this theme felt like people tried, and a lot of people just didn't really try and just wanted to just kind of get dressed up. But I will say, when I was telling you this, Jared, what was dope about this exhibit is they sort of commissioned like eight filmmakers to design these rooms throughout the exhibit and sort of take all these different themes, and kind of, I think they were each given like a period to interpret. So it's kind of this like cinematic little, you know, room that they've designed, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah, they said the Metropolitan Museum of Art has 13 period rooms of the museum's American wing to display mm-hmm. history of American fashion throughout the late 18th century to the late 20th century for In America, an Anthology of Fashion. Okay, so let's get to what really matters.
Yes.
Our faves, right? Travelle, mm-hmm. I'm going to let you start. You used to follow red carpets and live tweet them. And I asked you yesterday, I was like, what? You used to do that. What happened? And you were like, nobody was paying me to do it, so I stopped, or something like that. So, like, what were you looking for on the carpet last night, and what did you love and hate?
I don't know. I always feel like the Met Gala themes, it's like, it's a theme that, like, you know it when you see it, but you really can't describe it, right? I feel like that's always how I can understand or not understand the Met Gala theme. And so I'm always just interested. It's like, how could this be inspired by whatever the theme is? And then if it's not connected to the theme, it needs to be fucking amazing. Yeah, right? Like, because if it's good, we don't care about whether it's on theme or not, you know? And so I'll start and say that I think my favorite look last night, I'm thinking Lizzo. I'm also thinking, what's that white woman name?
Vanessa Hudgens.
Blake Lively. Mm-hmm.
Blake Lively, okay.
Y'all know I love a transition. I love a unfolding into something else.
It always has a trans end. No. Okay.
She had a moment, though. I will say, no shade to Blake. Lady Gaga did it better 2 years ago. It's fine. But her transition was beautiful. I will give her that.
So here's the thing. Blake Lively, we love a red carpet transition moment where you're going to go from one look to the next, right? Mm-hmm. The thing is, I didn't really like either of the looks.
Yikes.
I liked what it gave, right? I love, like, give me this full gown, give me this moment on the carpet and this, right, that we didn't expect. Give me Ryan Reynolds over to the side, kind of watching and gazing and, like, enjoying it. Give me all of that. But, like, the dress has to be good. And, like, I didn't love the dress. I didn't think it was terrible. I just thought it was, like, okay, right. My white woman of the night was Vanessa Hudgens. And, like, I thought Vanessa Hudgens' black thing, it was on theme, right? It was within, like, the era she was supposed to be in, but it was also just, like, gorgeous and beautiful and, like, giving us lace. And you know, I'm always here for, like, an all-black aesthetic, so, like, I loved that. That was one of my very favorite looks from the night. Tiffany, who was, like, your fave, your standout?
If we're doing white women of the night, so my favorite white woman of the night was actually, and ironically, she was not on theme. At least I don't think she was on theme really at all, but was Gigi Hadid. She was in Versace, this, like, massive, like, puffer burgundy jacket. I think the only thing that was maybe on theme was that she had this, like, corset over this, like, latex suit. But I just died when I saw that. I live.
I'm not in love with this, but I do think it's on theme.
Yeah.
Like, it's giving you corset sucked in, but also, like, grand gown. Yeah, and, like, I think Gigi Hadid is doing this. I don't know that I need the North Face coat, but, like,
that's shade.
That's what it's giving. No shade.
It's just an oversized.
It's giving puffer. FUBU hits the ground. Like,
I'm here for
it. It's too much.
I'm here for it.
Okay, what did you hate on the carpet last night?
Oof. As I go through my screen grabs.
Travelle, I'll let you start. What did you hate on the carpet?
I don't know if I hated anything. Ooh. Ashton Sanders.
Oh, no.
I wasn't feeling it. I don't know. I wasn't feeling it. Oh, and what's the man who keep playing in his granny wig?
Not Anderson .Paak.
Ricky Thompson?
That one. Oh, that wait. One. Anderson .Paak. Yes,
it was very... It was giving Ike Turner. Like,
listen.
So, I just want to say, I actually really like Ashton's look, and I would probably wear this, like, somewhere. But Anderson .Paak, I just don't think can do anything wrong for me right now. Like, it's those crazy good teeth, that smile that makes everything work. Now, mind you, I would be nervous to be around him in this outfit with a piece of cake in his hand, but I do think that this look is working for him. Tiffany, give us the last word. What is the look that didn't work for you?
I feel like this is controversial, and I'm so sad to say, but I'm going to have to go with, and it's not like she was the worst, but I just feel like she should do better, or she can do better, and that was SJP.
Oh.
The thing about Sarah Jessica, aka Carrie, is like, you were expected to just like blow us away, and I just feel like she's done this look before. And I know, I think she was wearing a Christopher John Rogers, who I do love, but it just didn't, you're Sarah Jessica Parker. Like, where was the wow? And so, like I said, not the worst look on the carpet by no means, just for me, knowing who she is. She's a fashion icon. I think she could have just did a little better.
I feel like it's actually very on the nose for the theme. And I'm not mad. Like, I mean, we're talking about the person who had a bird on her head in a wedding.
And she has
we've got to go.
Anyways, okay. But wait, I didn't say my fave. My fave was going to be also Lizzo, but Normani, I think, showed up and showed out, even though it really wasn't.
Normani.
I mean, yeah, even though it really wasn't.
Always.
But anyways.
Okay, Tiffany, thank you so much. Tell people where they can find you on the social medias. And your favorite episode of TV that you've directed that they can go watch?
Oh my God. First of all, I'm not really on the social media, but on Instagram, Tiffany Janelle J, if you want to follow me. And then my favorite episode, you can check out Black Monday season 3 or Dear White People season 4. I was a part of both of those seasons. So yeah.
Oh, and the Amazon series that you just did.
Oh, Hunters, which isn't out yet, but season 2 should be out, I believe, this summer.
Yeah. I live for season 1, honey. I live for season 1.
And before I go, can I just quickly shout out my best friend and her mother, who love you guys so much. Huge, huge fans.
Uh-huh.
Jessica and Miss Yolanda. So yeah, I just want to say hello to them because I know they're watching or listening.
Hi.
Jessica's one of the people who went back and started the show from the beginning and has been slowly progressing to catch up to where we are now. So I don't think she's caught up yet, but she'll hear this in a couple months.
Yes. Okay. Bye. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get into celebrity activism and whether or not it's a problem. I get the feeling we're going to disagree, but we'll see. That's coming up next. Hey there.
Oh no.
It's week 2 of the Max Fun Drive, and you know what that means?
It means we ain't got time for none of that foolishness, Jared. Fanti comes out Thursday, so there's only a couple few more days for folks to support the show if our listeners want to get more bang, the most bang, all right, for their book, all right?
I will. I'm going to hand you a towel so you can wipe off the small
yikes!
Of your back. What, the small of your, the moist back? What is it? The
mat?
The moist back drive? I don't know what it is. Let's do this. The only reason we're able to do this show every week is because we are supported by so many of our listeners. Without our listener support, there's no Fanti.
Can you even imagine a world without Fanti? I know you can't, okay? And because you can't, now is the time to help us, okay? Because you can like get lots of good stuff that we got coming, that we have planning for, special stuff. Starting for just $5 a month, tell the people, Jared, what they can get for $5.
For only $5, you get Max Fun High Fivers bonus content. Over 350 hours of bonus content from all of our shows over Maximum Fun. That is just for $5. But if folks can afford just a little bit more, like $10, what can they get, Travelle?
The $10 people, okay? I was about to come up with a very special name for y'all, but we just gonna call y'all family.
Okay. I got nervous.
Right. We just gonna call y'all family. And family members get a patch that we helped design from Moret. Moret is the name of the designer. There are 35 patches in total from all the different shows. But obviously, you know, the one that matters is ours.
So they get a patch that we designed and are very excited about that they can put on like their denim jacket or on their backpack or on their MacBook or whatever it is. Plus, they get all the bonus content. That's for $10. But for the folks that can sing $20, they get to join the friendship circle.
Tell the people what that is. What that mean, the friendship circle.
So it means they get a creativity pack or a rocket hat. You know, I love anything with creativity in the name.
Do you?
Well, listen, as a creative, I'm over here designing, you know, sometimes with the aid of a flower, maybe, that has been burned and the honor. Never
not
mind.
Not you burning roses.
not that flower. Not that flower. The Max Fun Creativity Pack will help you get in a creative headspace and live life to the fullest, or at least add a little extra fun to it. Artist and Max Funster Ellen Vandermeide illustrated a beautiful deck of 54 cards in the Max Fun Inspiration Deck. Each card has activity suggestions from your favorite hosts or all kinds of other cool things from Maximum Fun. It's a really fun kit that you can get. And we've got a lot of different things happening at the $10 level, the $20 level, but there's also a $35 level that we got to get to.
Tulips. Is it tulips? I think it's tulips.
Either, sweetie.
Oh, okay. At the $35 level, you can join the leadership squad. You get a Max Fun messenger bag, which you can put all of our complex and complicado patches, because you could just buy yourself some extras, you know, because we will have a separate sale where you could just buy the patch yourself, FYI. You know, that's a little, you know, the forecasting for those of you who are out there. Plus all of the gifts that come before it, okay? The creativity pack or the rocket hat, you know, you get the bonus content, all of that. For $50 a month, you can go even higher, become a silver seagull. Listen, here's the thing, y'all. At every price point, okay, however much expendable income that you got, you can put it towards us. We'll find something to do, you know, with your support.
All that said, you can become a Silver Eagle at $100 a month. We've got a whole cool prize pack of things there that comes up. If you want to be a Platinum Angel, first of all, I love the names of these levels because they sound like 90s R&B, like tracks, album titles and shit. Platinum Angel, you can support us with $200 a month. We didn't talk about that one last time. They get you a treasure box. We like to think of each episode of our show as a handmade treasure that we get to give to you, our audience. But honestly, the fact that MP3s are invisible strains the metaphor just a little bit. For our most generous members, we wanted to make sure that the image is real, packaging up one of your favorite episodes in a beautiful, one-of-a-kind, handcrafted treasure box. And we mean both of those things. One-of-a-kind, because each of these episodes will be introduced with a personal greeting from your favorite hosts. And handcrafted, because we couldn't find anyone to make this weird thing for us, so we're making them ourselves. Once you sign up at this level, we'll reach out to you personally to get your preferred episode and any other special requests within reason. Okay, so because Travelle has a mind that just will go any and every other place.
Now, how I get in it?
You've been here the whole time, sweetie. And if you're like, look, Jared, I'm already a Platinum Angel, and I be hitting a triple sow cow, and what else do you want from me? But you want to give more, right? Maybe you want to give flowers. Maybe you're thinking about, like, sunflowers or something else. You don't have to do that, because we have something that you can give, right? You can gift a membership for a friend, or an anonymous Max Funster. The recipient will get access to all the bonus content. And we're just really excited about all the different ways that we can offer up place for y'all to support the work that we're doing here at Maximum Fun. So go to MaximumFun.org/join. This is the end of the Max Fun Drive this week. And we're really, really pushing to be able to support the network and all of our shows here. So MaximumFun.org/join. Choose Fanti and get all the cool stuff that we got to offer. Now, let's get back to the show.
Welcome back, beautiful people. It is my only marginally verifiable belief that social justice movements have always had some sort of infighting. back when Moses and them was telling the Pharaoh, let my people go, I just know somebody was looking on like, who the hell he think he is? And even more, I'm sure that after what went down, and everybody was looking at Moses, how they were looking at him, the same person was like, oh, you get too big for your britches. Remember the community. Remember the Lord, our Savior, the mission, our purpose to freedom.
Travel.
And here we are, thousands of years later, and for almost as long as Black Lives Matter has been a rallying cry against police violence and greater anti-blackness, there has also been, let's call it discourse, about who's getting centered and who isn't, who gets the TV spots and who only gets to spread the message on Twitter, about who gets the book deals and contracts and production deals, and who is left behind to deal with the now agitated police force in a local community that became a global headline for a few years or months or weeks or days. So, a few months ago, New York Magazine did a package of stories to revisit the 10 years since Trayvon Martin's killing by George Zimmerman. In the package, there are a few different pieces that really take a look at the movement in different parts of the movement, Black Lives Matter movement, in really interesting and like necessary ways. One of those pieces that I want to lift up is a piece by Ernest Owens, friend and colleague of ours in NABJ, titled The Rise and Rupture of Campaign Zero, How the Founders of One of Black Lives Matter's Most Prominent Organizations Fell Out. We're going to have links to it in the show notes. The article takes a look at Campaign Zero, which, for those who aren't familiar, is the police reform organization that was founded by DeRay McKesson, Janetta Elzey, Brittany Packnett Cunningham, and Sam Sinyangwe. These are names you'll probably remember most from around Ferguson, where in 2014, Michael Brown was killed. Now, Campaign Zero has become one of the most visible policy-driven organizations calling for police reform in America, and they were said to be at one time taking ideas long embraced by on-the-ground protesters and using the power of social media to persuade politicians to embrace those ideas too. The org took them from the streets to the White House, but now DeRay is the only one of those founders still involved. Others have been fired or resigned. There's even broader headlines we're seeing about, you know, questionable, you know, money management practices of the Black Lives Matter Global Network Foundation. I feel like this also dovetail with ongoing conversations about folks like a DeRay or like a Sean King. And you and I have wanted to kind of delve into this topic, Jared, for a minute now. And this package of stories seemed like a good opportunity for us to talk about that, talk about these ideas around ego and celebrity in the broader Black Lives Matter ecosystem. So to start us, I want to know kind of like, how aware are you of like the broader complexities of this conversation? What did you know or didn't know right before reading this article in particular?
So I've been reading up on this, and I got to say, like, I have just always been really skeptical of the amount of criticism that they've been getting from like any and every direction, whether we're talking about Campaign Zero, if we're talking about BLM, if we're talking about Patrice, if we're talking about DeRay, like any of them specifically, even Sean to some degree. I've just always been a little side-eyed to the level of criticism that they're getting, mm-hmm, right? Because I feel like it is often really rooted in anti-blackness, which shocking, right? As I've said here before on the show, I knew Sean King prior to activism, right? Sean King was pastor of a church that I used to attend before he became an activist. I was there, I don't know, maybe less than a year. And then he closed the church and left and became an activist. And like, I started seeing how people were attacking him just when he was like sending tents to Haiti after an earthquake. So I haven't like followed all of the criticism of all of these different places because I started watching how Sean was getting it and then how Patrice got it and how other people got it and DeRay got it and all of that. And I just don't follow it because I feel like I am sure that they are not operating perfectly, right? I'm sure that there are things that they need to be better at doing from a business standpoint, from a movement standpoint, even from an entrepreneurial standpoint. I'm sure that there are things that they could probably do better. But I just haven't engaged a lot of the criticism because I feel like it is often so rooted in this idea that we're supposed to be broke, we're supposed to be operating from poverty, we're supposed to be giving our whole lives to this shit and never being able to like gain anything for ourselves from it. And so I don't really follow it.
You just said so much there that I think is interesting. Ripe ground for tilling.
You're like, he was sending tents to Haiti? Which was a real thing, by the way.
Yes, I was alive then. Okay, so one of the things that I think is important to note from what I'm hearing from what you're saying is that like when you're talking about, when you're saying attacks, you're talking about these criticisms that are coming from other people in movement work, not the other attacks coming from the religious right or white supremacists.
No, I actually mean the opposite. So like oftentimes I've heard like conservative criticisms that become criticisms from people in the movement, right? Now, mind you, there have been plenty of things that people within the movement have said, this could be better, that was terrible, why did we do X, Y, and Z? But like, there have been active initiatives from conservatives to launch, you know, lies and attacks on these people to be able to discredit their work and dismantle, you know, the organizations that they're creating. And like, we've seen that over the course of years. I'm just always really skeptical of the criticism that I hear if it's not coming from people that are on the inside. And even then, I'm like, how much of that is a disgruntled person and how much of it is someone that has like a real concern? Like, I feel like I've heard a lot of things that have been credible, right? Like, but I'm just always, I'm leery.
Well, oftentimes, you know, the disgruntled person is disgruntled for a reason.
Sometimes, yeah.
And so I wanted to say that. What's interesting to me is part of this conversation is about, I think, what does it mean? And you kind of hit on this moments ago. What does it mean? What is it supposed to look like to be an activist? And many people, at least questioning how you can become a notable person because of your activism from this tragic situation. And that ends up being the catalyst that puts you in the spaces that you end up getting put into, and now you are a thousandaire, if not a millionaire. Some people feel that that type of trajectory is questionable and concerning when then at the same time you have, say, the mothers of the killed folks or the family members of the...
Mothers of the movement.
Mothers of the movement is like a formal term, but I also mean like, you know, the people who aren't formally part of that as well.
I hear you.
Right, who are saying such and such happened, you got a book deal out of it, and I got, not my, you know, my family, the cause, the people still here in this community, we don't got no community center to show for it, or something like that. I'm wondering if those types of reads, arguments have ever like stuck with you in any meaningful way. Has it been something that you've thought about?
Absolutely. So I think that the part of this that does get murky, right, is like all of the money that gets raised by these organizations, and then like where does that money go? However, I'm not mad at Patrice Cullors for having money. Right. I'm not mad at DeRay McKesson for having money, because like, as I said before, if we just use Patrice as an example, right, for this discussion, if Patrice Cullors didn't have money right now, I would be concerned, because she is the founder of one of the biggest organizations around the movement right now. Right. And is going around and speaking at companies, in movement spaces all over the world, and accepting a fee for that. Right. And she should be. That's the job, right? That's part of the job. Similarly, people like yourself and I, like, we go and speak at different places. And like, a lot of that has to do with like the work that we've done, whether it's through organizations, through our work as journalists or whatever. And we get paid for that because that is our job, right? And like, the amount that we get paid has a lot to do with how much work we've done before and how much visibility we have and all of those different things, right? So if Patrice Cullors didn't have money, I would be concerned about girl, why you don't have no money, right? Why haven't you been able to, like, do something over the course of 10 years with some money to be able to, like, buy a home for yourself? The idea that she spent $3 million on homes over the years, like, that sounds right, right? Like, she should be able to have some money. There's another article from New York Magazine that talks about her buying $3 million in homes and how BLM, the national organization, the Movement for Black Lives, bought a $6 million home.
I believe that was the Black Lives Matter Global Network Foundation.
Exactly, to be clear, sorry. But, like, they've raised tens of millions of dollars, right? And so buying a $6 million home kind of paused me because I was like, how do we know that that is not a part of investment, right? I have a best friend who runs a nonprofit organization, and I know that their investment portfolio is very diverse. And, like, there are myriad different ways that we can look at how they spend their money. But even in the article, they talk about, like, how much money has been raised and what they did with it. And they're like, oh, they're going to be using it for creators and using it for housing for folks that are not necessarily safe within the movement and all that kind of stuff. And, like, well, they've had the house for 17 months. How come they haven't done anything with it yet? And it's like, okay, so now you're a part of their strategy team, like, that is supposed to be looking at how they're developing the work that they're doing. Like, they can have investments in real estate like every other nonprofit organization could do. And the real challenge that I have here is, like, there's no, like, crime that's been committed, right? Like, we know, you and I especially know how heavily regulated nonprofit organizations are, how much paperwork there has to be, how much you have to answer this and answer that. And so the idea that, like, if they had done something wrong, there would be litigation about that, right? And even, to be quite honest, like, there would be some kind of issues that would come up from that, right? If y'all are misappropriating funds, if y'all are doing things that are improper, like, that's going to come up at some point in the state, in the court, in the federal system. And so, like, oh, well, why are they doing that? Or how come they're spending their money that way? Or why are they getting so much shine? It's like, that's a critique, right? But it's not a crime. And they're not doing something wrong. They're just doing something in a way that you wouldn't have necessarily done it, you being whomever.
Well, so one, it remains to be seen, based on the reporting, it remains to be seen whether a crime,
right,
whether financial mismanagement has been done. So the jury is still out on that.
And pause there.
But
important point even there is, like, the idea that, like, this organization, and I want to be clear, I'm not standing for Black Lives Matter and, like, thinking, like, they're perfect and shining and that they've never done anything wrong, because that's not how I feel. I also want to acknowledge, like, the state or the government coming after organizations like that would also not be new, right? Like, we've seen that happen before. So I just want to say, like, I'm watching all of that with a bit of a side eye for various reasons, but go on.
I mean, yeah, but and yet it still does not remove, to in my eyes, reporting that shows a questionable order of events.
Sure.
Right? As it relates specifically to this house that the organization bought and did not report for a year. And that's what the reporting says.
The reporting also says, though, like, that it's coming up in their financial disclosures this May. That is, like, okay, well, like, if that's when their financial disclosures are, let's see if it's in there, right?
Well, I do think that these types of organizations that are outgrowths of this particular type of movement work, I do think that this conversation becomes complex because I do think that there is kind of a mission purpose oriented idea of, like, what use of these funds should look like. Right, that is an outgrowth of the grassroots local community organizers who are the heartbeat, right, of a lot of this work. And I think there's a difference between that, or that, in my opinion, from what I'm witnessing, there's a difference between that and some of the decisions that now have to be made as a 501c3 registered, you know, nonprofit organization. And I do think that those different vantages has led to a lot of the discourse that we're seeing now. The task at hand is, can the organization continue to kind of ride the line between the two in a way that is ultimately, I would say, accountable to, this kind of reminds me a lot of NABJ, but like accountable to the local community groups that are supposed to be, you know, your lifeblood, your physical manifestation, right, of the movement, of the brand, and the work in a community. And I think a lot of folks would say that some of the reported movements and dealings of a number of these folks as individuals who've become kind of representatives and faces of the movement, as well as some of their organizations that they have led or currently lead, is that I feel like I see a lot of people on the ground who are like, you remember when Charles in the last episode, or in Charles's episode on school, talked about how getting degrees, you know, and being in some of these spaces sometimes necessarily causes us to fall out of relationship with our blackness, right? I'm using that to say I think that there are there are local community organizing folks who've been in the movement as long, if not longer, than some of the names that we've mentioned, who are looking at these names and saying, you have fallen out of right relationship with the work, with the mission, with the community, and you need, they would say, to get back in line.
Sure. Right. Like the idea that like you're out there for the movement, and then you start getting some shine on your name, you get more money, and like your lens starts to look different, or the people around you start to look different. But like, I think that's pretty common, right? Like you have to work actively to align, you know, your purpose and make sure that you're staying on track with the things that you said you wanted to do and be and who you are. But like, ultimately, let me put it this way. I have stopped being so resistant to the idea of people telling me that I've changed because of the work that I'm doing, or because of the attention that I get, or whatever, right? This idea that I'm supposed to stay the same person because I'm in the movement, or I'm supposed to stay the same person, and my everything that I want is supposed to stay the same because I'm an activist or doing advocacy work or whatever. Like this idea that, oh, you've changed and your priorities are different. Like my priorities should grow and evolve and change, right? And I'm just not mad at that. I'm not saying that, but I think these people are acting perfectly. Again, I don't even, like I said, get involved with a whole bunch of the discourse around what they have and haven't done because I'm so skeptical of it. But also, like, Patrice Cullors, again, if we're using her as an example here, has been in the movement for 10 years, right? She has a name and has been a part of building a movement that has gone around the world. If she's still doing the same shit that she was doing 10 years ago, if she was still thinking the same way that she was thinking 10 years ago, if she was still strategizing the same way that she was 10 years ago, that would be a problem.
But that falls as very simplistic on my ears, because I don't find that the criticisms are that simple, right? That she has changed. And I should be clear, I also don't know what the specific criticisms are to Patrice as an individual. Besides, there's an article, a profile that friend of the show Donovan Ramsey did at the LA Times that came out back in January, in which Patrice talks about her journey since stepping down from the organization and the reporting that you already mentioned about her homes and things like that. But I don't think that my read of the criticisms of many of these people is not that they have just simply changed, but that the ways that they are operating now are the antithesis of what is said to be their brand, their work, their mission, which I think is a more salient criticism to me than just, oh, you know, you got big headed. Like, it's like, you got big headed, but also I am a capitalist. So when I say this comment, I'm not coming at the capitalists. I want the money. I want it all. But a lot of the criticisms of these folks, right, who have popped up, in the Tamika Mallory is another one, right? Brittany Packnett Cunningham is another, who've popped up in these like more visible roles, is that like, oh, these people are now capitalists, and yeah, and I don't know what to do with all that, because again, I want my money. I'm, you know,
well, I want to be clear. Like, I feel like we play fast and loose with the term capitalist around here, but
well,
also,
yeah,
like,
we do.
But I think that the idea that they're not supposed to operate as capitalists within a capitalist system always irritates me, right? Like, the idea, like, oh, you're supposed to be above the system that you're operating in, like, yes, right? We're supposed to be trying to change the system and make it better, but we also have to operate within it, right? And so, like, come on. Go ahead.
Yeah, or I mean, the way that I have always heard it, I have also heard it articulated, is that, like, you know, you can be anti-capitalist and still get paid whatever your worth is how I feel like I've heard some people try to articulate it. But I think even that in of itself is a complex conversation, right? Like, it's like, all of this is like real murky to me, which I think is one of the reasons why it's a consistent, like, discussion and debate about, you know, what, how high is too high for organizers and activists, right? And how can you tell that someone might have fallen out of relationship with, you know, whatever you believe the movement's missions and purposes and goals to be? And then I also think at the same time, in what ways is what we're seeing right now the type of correction that is necessary if indeed these individuals have fallen out of step with, you know, the prevailing movement's, you know, goals or whatever, and their desire is to still maintain whatever cachet that said movement, you know, affords them? Like, is this part of that correction moment? I don't know. And with that, beautiful people, we are going to take a break. We want to hear from y'all. Hit us up on the social medias using the hashtag FantiFam. We are on the Twitters, the Instagrams, and the Tickety Talks at Fanti Podcasts. Coming up, we're going to get into our listener feedback segment and our dishonorable mentions. BRB. All right, y'all. So you already know that we couldn't do this show without your support. But we don't do the show because we want to hear ourselves talk. Well, Jared likes hearing himself talk.
I was going to say, that's actually a big part of it for me. I was like, I need a place that will pay me to hear my own voice. We, as I said on Twitter this week earlier, one of our hopes was that when we created Fanti and brought it to Maximum Fun, that we'd be able to have a place where the conversations were as fun as they were valuable. Valuable for Travelle and I as journalists, as creatives, but also as people. And I hoped that y'all as an audience would get it and connect with it. And you really, really have.
Yeah, and we really wanted to bring some, you know, perspectives, some point of views from, you know, folks who look like us, who live like us, who move through the world like us, and, you know, deserve to be part of these types of, you know, complex and complicado conversaciones.
You and the bilingualness, or the multilingualness, really, we appreciate it.
Period. Don't limit me.
We know that y'all are connecting with what we're talking about here just based on all the emails that you send us each week, or tweet at us, or live tweet while you're listening to the show. We see you, Sheena. Mm-hmm. We've heard from educators who listen to the show, people like Jacob. He sent an email saying, quote, as a white guy from a less racially diverse city, it is so valuable to hear authentic conversations centered in blackness, where the focus is not on packaging the discourse for white ears. Then he went on to ask, I'm curious what you think is important to keep in mind for a white teacher candidate who is trying to serve a diverse community. What are the pitfalls of being a white teacher to students of color, and are some of them unavoidable? As well, what are your experiences with secondary English teachers in general? Are there any positive or negative examples which come to mind? I'm aware that this topic is very tied up in institutional racism and language supremacy, so I'm curious to hear your thoughts.
Child, I don't know.
This is one of various comments and emails and letters and all kinds of different things that we get from folks that listen to the show that are using the conversations that we're having here in classrooms, in their workplaces, in their families, and in various different places.
Yes, this show has allowed us to connect with folks who help us even make the show better. That's why we got a whole listener feedback segment. We don't get to read out all of the emails and texts and tweets and stuff that y'all send us. But Texas, okay? But we've heard from so many of you who are therapists, who are teachers, as Jared said, who are students of life. It's a hard knock life.
Okay, come on.
I just want to shout out Dr. Diet. She always provides great, wonderful, necessary, useful feedback for us. Candace, we see you, sis. All right, shout out to you. There's so many of you all. And then, you, Jared, you said you had some feedback from Dr. Spirit.
Dr. Spirit said that her clip that she shared on social media talking about the ways that trauma shows up in individuals versus in groups versus in communities, how that looks like trauma and culture and all those different things. She was saying how, like, there was an incredible amount of feedback that came back from that, that one post that she did that we also shared as well. So we know that the discussions we have on the show are resonating with y'all, and it's really humbling to know that we are able to share topics that folks aren't really hearing about anywhere else.
So if you are one of those people who have a couple few extra dollars, okay, you can help us keep doing what we're doing by supporting us today during this last week of the Max Fun Drive, okay? We have multiple levels where you can get different, you know, little perks starting at $5 a month. That's where you get bonus content of all of the shows on the network. There's a $10 a month where you get a fabulous patch as well as the bonus content. At $35 a month, you can get the Max Fun Messenger Bag. And at $100 a month, you can get a fabulous access pass, which allows participation in virtual hang times with all of the hosts and staff over at Max Fun. Okay. And if you happen to be someone who you like, listen, I can't jump up to the next level, but I could do an extra dollar or two. Okay, then you can boost and upgrade. You can boost. You can just boost. You can do that too, honey.
Please join us as a member over at MaximumFun.org/join. Or if you want to gift that membership, as Travell was saying, if you think the show is valuable, please do that. It's really heartening to hear from y'all. I'm the recipients of the gift memberships. The gift itself is anonymous, but the recipients publicly share about how grateful they are. And so we really appreciate all of you that give a gift membership as well.
All right. So head to MaximumFun.org/join. To become a member today, we truly, truly appreciate it. Let's get back to the shizzo. Welcome back, beautiful people. We're going to get into our listener feedback segment. We have an email here from Candace. This is in response to our tipping episode. Candace says, sitting here listening to the episode about tipping, and y'all know I have strong opinions on this. For context, I have never worked in a service position that received tips. My pre-corporate positions were union positions, so still blue collar, but in a different way. That said, I grew up lower middle class with parents who were adamant about tipping. My dad was a server on skates at Sonic back in the day before working on the railroad and then going to computer school, quote unquote, in 1981. His mother was an elementary school teacher who supplemented their income as a hotel housekeeper because she refused to clean white folks' houses. I always try to operate in a people-first mentality. These are the tipping rules I follow. So I wanted to share some of these tipping rules. Get, you know, maybe you can work for you all, maybe not. Candace says, if you can't afford to tip, oh, wow. Oh, she coming out hot. If you can't afford to tip minimum 20%, cook at home.
Okay.
Look at the position.
Right out the gate.
Yeah. Look at the position the person is in. If you even think they're getting paid something trash, you need to tip. Ask the server. On the sly, usually, do you prefer I tip in cash? Do you get the whole tip, or do you gotta split it with the busses and the hosts? Managers and owners will steal tips, especially electronically, and I don't need the server to even tell me out loud. Their eyes always tell me. She says sometimes that she will ask them for their Cash App so she can send it to them directly. Candace continues, if the service is trash, she says still leave a tip. Because babies need diapers and rent is still due. But she suggests calling the manager over to the table to discuss the issue. I am absolutely not afraid to do this. Most of the time, the meal might get comped or discounted, but I still tip because that is my praxis. Retraining or discipline is left to the manager. Caveat, I am less likely to complain to the manager if the server is a black woman. It's got to be egregious for me to do that. I know that's right. And then lastly, she says, I strip the towels, bag the trash, and leave a tip and thank you note for hotel housekeeping, even if I declined housekeeping. That is in honor and recognition of the work my grandmother didn't want to do, but had to. I do not care if it appears extra to others. Interested. That's part of Candace's email. I want to leave it there. Thoughts? Feelings?
I'm realizing how many rules I do and don't have around tipping. Mm-hmm. I always forget that you're supposed to tip the housekeeping staff in a hotel. That I always think about that like an hour after I've left the hotel, like, fuck, I'm an asshole. And like, I think about that all the time. The reporting bad service to a management thing, similarly, if the person is black or of color, I'm a lot less likely to do it.
Reparations.
Listen, equity. If we are looking at like just something that is just over the top, egregiously terrible, then I'll say something. But I actually go in the opposite direction quite often. I love to call the manager over and tell them how great the server was and how much of an asset they are to the restaurant. Yes. I love that shit.
That's great. So, yeah.
But thank you for your email, Candace.
Thank you, Candace. And I had just one quick last email here from Ryan that we got just before we started recording today. They were listening to the Tipping Culture episode, and they have an idea for your segment that we are tentatively calling Jared's Rant.
You are calling it that.
Ryan says, sorry, not sorry in advance, and offers two options for the name of the segment. A Hill to Die On with Jared. And a Jared Hill to Die On.
So the challenge is, I'm not really a big fan of die anywhere in proximity to my name.
I know that's right.
Yeah, I mean, I could see a hill to die on. We're going to pray about that, Ryan.
Yes, let's pray about it.
Thank you for the email. I saw that come in right before we started taping. So we'll think about it and get back to you. I think that the segment should be called like Sugar and Spice or Piss and Vinegar or something, where it's like, what? We're angry about something and then we're happy about something. We're working on that. Anyway, it's now time for Dishonorable Mentions. These are the stories of people that caught our attention this week, either for their good or their stupid. They deserved a call out.
Oh my God. I'm sorry, Jared. What? I have to interrupt because I don't want to wait too long. I just want to read out what Laura put into the chat.
I saw that she wrote something while I was reading and I was like, I'm scared.
Let's not make a mountain out of a Jared Hill.
Okay, we're done here. My first... I hate all of you people. I just want to be clear. You know what? We'll continue taking suggestions one more week and we'll let you know next time. I want to give an honorable mention to a product that I've actually mentioned on the show last year that has gotten better. It's called Black Girl Sunscreen. As we're getting more and more close to summer and more folks are going outside, I wanted to shout out this brand of sunscreen that is owned by a black woman. It's called Black Girl Sunscreen. It's available. I get it at Target, but you can find it online. This is not an ad, by the way. But what I love about it is there's a clear gel version of it that I use for my face. I'm a light-skinned person with a lot of freckles, and like sunscreen is important to me because the sun exposure brings more freckles. And I wanted to like chill out a little bit. But Black Girl Sunscreen is fantastic. I love it. They have a cream, but they also have a clear gel that I enjoy. Second thing I want to shout out is I mentioned last week that we were wrapping up school at USC last week and, you know, shouted out my students. But this week, everyone's getting ready to graduate. And so next Friday will be graduation for all of the graduating seniors and master's folks over at USC. And I'm just really proud of everybody. Commencement exercises are coming up. And apparently I'm supposed to be doing something, I guess, or being there, which I guess is part of being a professor. Didn't realize that. Last thing I want to bring up, earlier this week we had the quote-unquote leak of a Supreme Court decision that will be effectively overturning Roe versus Wade and making abortion illegal in many states across the country almost immediately. Obviously, you know, over in Jared Rant Hill to Die On with Jared Hill Mountain Hill Top thing, have been talking about Don't Say Gay and why it has been sticking with me a lot as we're seeing the GOP try to make this country into a different thing. And as we see abortion getting ready to go, seemingly, It is another alarm that I think should be going off for folks. And I saw that Hillary Clinton tweeted this week, again, women's rights are human rights and human rights are women's rights. I just think that this is a reminder that the law does not reflect what is just or even moral. In a democracy where 70% of citizens support Roe, the Supreme Court seems poised to just throw it out because all of this shit is a sham. The law is a reflection of who wields power, not what is right or wrong. And I hope that this is energizing for people to kind of get out there, to vote, to be engaged civically. And when you hear people saying that they want to burn this shit down and let it fall, moments like these, like Don't Say Gay, like abortion, like anti-trans bills, all of the different things that we've been talking about in this anti-black ass system, we're all working hard to reform it, but we're also trying to remake and reform something to work in ways that it was never designed to support in the first place. But like, I'm going to keep harping on this because I think it's important. That's all.
I will just add that, you know, abortion is not only a women's rights issue. It is also a LGBTQ issue as well. Indeed. And a black issue and a poor people's issue, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
And it impacts those people, tends to impact those people doubly, triply, and even worse than anybody else.
Doubly, triply, and worsely. I have just one audible bitch shit. I want to give a shout out to the production, the Broadway production of A Strange Loop. The writer of the show, Michael R. Jackson, won the Pulitzer, the 2020, Pulitzer for drama back then about his, it's a black queer musical. I have not seen it, but I've heard nothing but amazing things. The list of producers of the show are Billy Porter, Jennifer Hudson, Don Cheadle, Mindy Kaling, RuPaul, and Zach Stafford, who is a colleague of ours in this industry. Have heard nothing but amazing things. I'm going to try to make my way to see it before it closes, but I just wanted to shout that out. Shout out to the musicals out here in these streets.
All right, now it is time for...
Black history is happening every day.
That's right. It is time to talk about excellent black folks and like the amazingness that is happening. I saw this tweet that I want to shout out, and I reached out to the person who tweeted it, and I was just really impressed. There's a tweet that says... So the school counselor just called me to ask if I was aware that my daughter planned and led a student protest today where 100-plus students walked out of their third period to hold a BLM rally on the yard because they feel teachers treat the black students differently and unfairly. She's 12 years old. I thought, like, I love seeing the movement happening so young. The fact that she organized over 100 students within her, I'm guessing if she's 12, she must have been in like 7th or 8th grade. I DM'd her mom who tweeted about this, and she said that her daughter's name is Khalees and she's in Berkeley, Bay Area shout out. So I just want to shout out Khalees for, you know, turning it up at her school. Apparently she ended up giving a speech at the school and like made a whole to-do about it. They said that all of the students were like really, really engaged. So I'm excited about it.
Shout out to her.
Yeah.
All righty. If this conversation piqued your interest and you want more of this.
Good, good.
Check out another episode. We spoke a little bit about kind of the discourse around Patrice Cullors in episode 93, Bougetto. So check that out if you are interested. And before we go, we want to remind you again, this is the last week of the Max Fun Drive. Oh, also, I know I told y'all in last week's episode that we were going to be doing, you know, a special salon this coming Friday. So tomorrow, if you will listen to this on Thursday. Well, I obviously lied because you didn't get that email I said that you should have had by the time the episode came out. Now, did you? Uh-huh. Yeah, I know you didn't because you tweeted me. All of y'all tweeted me. Okay, that's my fault. I forgot. I got a lot going on. Okay, but you will be getting an email soon. I promise. We're going to reschedule it. It's still going to happen. So I just want to let y'all know, you know, listen, it's my fault. But like, y'all, life is life. It's fine. All right.
I just want to be clear, we're making former salons available as BOCO as well. Travel cannot fuck that up. So, well, they can, but Swish is working on it, so it probably won't get fucked up. But Travelle, thank you for your service.
Yeah, so both of those will be in demand and available to you if you become a Maximum Fun member and get access to all that bonus content. You see how the world go round and round like the Cheetah Girls? Period.
We needed a Cheetah Girls reference. It's been a few weeks. More than anything, we're really glad to be a part of an organization with values, especially in the times that we're living in right now. We are unapologetically progressive, unapologetically working to uplift humanity. And the shows on the network are listener supported, and it's so important for independent media. And by supporting Fantai during the drive, you're ensuring that these points of view have a platform, and we are reminded of how important that is this week, especially. Also, shout out to Maximum Fund for making some contributions to Black feminist organizations this past week after the news about Roe v. Wade came out. Really, really appreciate that. All that said, we are done. We appreciate y'all listening. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, we ask that you hit us with a 5-star rating and let us know what you think about the show in the reviews. If you have a comment or a suggestion about this week's show, we're at Fantai Podcast on Instagram, Twitter, and now on TikTok as well. Use the hashtag FantaiFam. It will jump in and see your comments. Or you can email us to fantai@maximumfun.org. All that said, it's really important that you make sure to join maximumfun.org/join.
Yes, yes, yes. Our music is brought to you, as always, by the one and only Corece, Core.ece. He's actually got a new single out that you should check out. Our graphics are by Ashley Wynn and the folks over at Moonhouse Creative. And our editor is Will Hagel.
Our producer is Laura Swisher. This is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.
Hit
Welcome
the music!
To Fantai Beautiful People. Oh, Jesus, my God.